to the serious work of Parliament, one of the core constitutional functions to legislate. We have a bill in front of us. We've been doing work on it off and on, as everyone knows, but I thought I would just remind everyone, including those who are here for the public hearings, a few things. And we'll do that as soon as we adopt the actual programme, the agenda. As you can see here, we've got public hearings starting from 9:30 until 5:30 today. We've got a very, very tight schedule. And I know that you'll all be here. We also have a number of people here. Of course, I do see the DDG, and that is Mr. MacDonald, yes, McKenzie. I also see a few other people, but in the meantime, let me just get the actual people from CCRD, that's the Consumer Corporate Regulation Division. It's Ms. Mukhadi Matunzi, thank you. Ms. Dineo Masha, good morning, admin clerk. I can see you may be admin clerk now, but no doubt you'll soon be a DDG, eh? Mr. Nkosinati Nkonza, is it Nkonza with an A? Right, okay. And of course MC, who's our our liaison officer, parliamentary liaison officer of the DTI. Thank you very much. We're with us, that is Advocate Charmaine van der Merwe, who is in the legal section of Parliament, one of the seniors in that particular section. We have the Deputy Director of Legislation, number two in the department, and that is Ms. Mashendri Padiachi, is that right? All right. Thank you very much, MC, for drawing that up for me. We also have many members of the committee. We do have an apology, a late apology from the Honourable Dean MacPherson, is that correct? So what we're going to do is to do the the motion of desirability for the bill can only be done once we have a quorum. I'm sure you can see we won short of a quorum. So we will do that as soon as we can get the Honourable MacPherson, and I expect to be here in the next 7 minutes. Meanwhile, we will provisionally adopt this agenda. Can I have someone to provisionally adopt the agenda? Thank you. There we are. Honourable Williams, seconded by the Honourable Mantush. Can we please have the apologies other than the Honourable MacPherson?
Chairperson, we have an apology from Ms. Lowe from the EFF. She made a medical apology, as well as an apology from Mr. Kacharya, who is attending to part of business. Edward Albert indicated he would arrive in the lecture, he will attend. As well as Mr. Esther.
The Copyright Amendment Bill seeks to align existing, outdated copyright legislation with the digital era and the developments at a multilateral level. There are many, many developments that this bill touches on. The proposed provisions in the bill itself are strategically aligned with the treaty South Africa is signatory to, has reviewed, looking at just some of them. One is looking at the WIPO, the World Intellectual Property Organization, the Copyright Treaty, which is WCT, which deals with the copyright protection in the digital environment, which even to me, that will be new. The WIPO performance and phonograms and treaty. That's a very difficult one, and which is why we have invited the sister committee to join us when it can. That's arts and culture. I think it's Dr. Tom, isn't it? Honourable Tom, the chairperson. Right. We also are looking at the Beijing Treaty for the Protection of Audiovisual Performances and the Marrakesh Treaty to facilitate access to published works for persons who are blind and visually impaired or otherwise disabled. The alignment would allow South Africa access or enable us to accede, I should rather say, to international treaties and conventions which require domestic legislation consistent with international imperatives. That is one of the important factors of this bill, in that once it has passed through Parliament and been adopted, it may well be amended by ourselves again, we will then be able to accede to such international treaties. This alignment, as I said, would enable South Africa to do so. Furthermore, it should ensure effective governance, social protection, employment creation, and reduction of some of the inequalities within the creative industries. The bill seeks to implement the recommendations of the Copyright Review Commission and to address the challenges faced by authors and creators of copyrightable works. In particular, to ensure that their economic interests and rights are not abused. And that is a very difficult part of our environment that we're going to have to go through. The bill also seeks to implement the recommendations of these review commissions, but including that the challenges include abuse due to the lack of formalization of the creative industry, pirating and counterfeiting, unfair contracts which abound in our own country, resulting in the perpetual signing away of their economic rights, non-payment of royalties and legal time rights, lack of enforcement and the digital enforcement of these rights. We've had many, many artists asking us to please expedite legislation that would address these issues. And perhaps once we've completed our oversight in this bill, we will be able to do that. Other purposes of the bill are to reward and incentivize authors of knowledge and art, and to introduce improved exceptions and limitations into copyright law that enhances access to and use of copyright works, particularly for the advancement of education and research. Now, I'm well aware that there are different points of view in the room, and members will have the opportunity to listen to these points of view, unpack it, and then take a decision on how they can be, if necessary, included in the legislation. As far as the legislative process goes, the bill has been formally introduced and tabled in Parliament by the Executive and subsequently referred by the Speaker of Parliament to the Portfolio Committee on Trade and Industry for its consideration and report. According to the Constitution, this committee may, upon considering the bill, recommend it to the National Assembly to reject, amend, or adopt. The committee may also select to redraft the bill. I know that Ms. Vanessa Kenzie is aware we've redrafted some bills in their entirety, other than the preamble. So, this is not unknown territory, but we believe, you know, certainly I've been here 7 years as chair, that the necessity for that may well have become considerably reduced in the process. The committee may also seek to redraft the bill dependent on the number or degree of amendments that would be deemed necessary. The committee is also obliged to engage the public on the bill and consider these written and oral inputs during its consideration of the bill. The committee may also determine that it requires technical assistance and considering the bill due to the complex nature and intricacies of copyright legislation. MPs are Jacks and Jills of it, but we're certainly not experts in any one field. The appropriate procurement process would need to be followed if we engage such services that are not in Parliament itself. So I think this, I would like a copy made of this, Mr. Herman's, and on the other hand, I shall email this to all members of the committee itself, and I think that would also be helpful. I don't want to delay this any further, so I'm going to ask the Honourable Williams, do you think we could get someone from the ANC to join us so we can continue? Can you try the DSS offices, and can you try, we know the DA are going to be late from the Freedom Front. For us to continue, we do need to have quorum, you see. I'm sure we all understand that. Thank you. Thank you, Honourable Esther Hazen. We got your apology for 9:30. You know that you would be late. I'm talking to the Honourable Esther Hazen. I wasn't aware you were also a member of the family. Honourable Esther Hazen, we did get your apology, but I do want to ask you: have you got energy this morning?
No, I didn't. Went to a chemist first, but it was closed.
All right. Okay. No, because in that case we can enjoy your presence throughout the day. That's why I'm asking, you know, if you haven't got the energy, your other committee. Right. Fine, thank you. For the record again, and it doesn't affect those two members who have just walked in, legislation takes precedence over every other piece of work other than a three-line whip. A funeral or your own presence in hospital. Now, I will not say that again. People will be marked absent. Right. The motion of desirability. Copyright Amendment Bill B13, 2017. That in the opinion of a committee, legislation is desirable to amend the Copyright Act 1978 so as to define certain words and expressions. Then we've got several points. To allow for the reproduction of copyright work. Provide for the protection of copyright in artistic work, to provide for the accreditation and registration of collecting societies, to provide for the procedure for settlement of royalties disputes, to allow fair use of copyright work, to provide for access to copyright works by persons with disabilities, to provide for the protection of authorship of orphan works by the state, to provide for the establishment of the Intellectual Property Tribunal, to provide for the appointment of members of the Intellectual Property Tribunal, to provide for the powers and functions of the Intellectual Property Tribunal, to provide for prohibited conduct in respect of technological protection measures, to provide for prohibited conduct in respect of copyright management information, to provide for management of digital rights, to provide for certain new offences, and to provide for matters connected therewith. Can someone please move this motion of desirability? Honourable Williams.
Chairperson, I move the motion of desirability.
We have a second. Can we please have a seconder? Honourable Van Skalkwyk.
Thank you, Chairperson. I second the proposal.
Who are present. We did get late apologies from several of you. The one still outstanding is the Honourable Elvis, who is still on his way. And I understand the Honourable Kachalia has got party business and the Honourable Lowe medical issues. We're going to start straight away. It's now 9:55. And we also have a request by Professor Kayaka to leave when he has completed his input, as he has another academic engagement. So it's regrettable that we started 30 minutes after the appointed time. There's not much we can do about that now. I'll get the Mr. Hermans to indicate how much time you have. How much time are we really going to enable people? It was originally, that's added on, it's about half an hour. Right, go ahead, please. Please talk into the mic if you need to move it.
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for the opportunity to speak at these hearings. The language I'll be using to raise my concerns and opinion to this committee will be strong, and I don't make any apologies for such strong language. There's no way in which matters of this importance can or should be sugarcoated. And the reason for the strong language is twofold. Repeated attempts have been made to indicate to DTI why its proposals and indeed legislation which it has passed, like the Intellectual Property Laws Amendment Act of 2013, are misguided. But there's no indication whatsoever that we are getting legislation of improved quality. We constantly faced with a situation that DTI's proposals threaten to do more harm than good. Pleas for good sense to prevail fall on deaf ears. The other reason is that the manner in which this type of legislation is developing is deeply concerning. Without sort of prior warning, we just get the new amendment bill, and interested parties are not given adequate opportunity to respond and voice their concerns about the consequences and implications for important legislation of this nature. We are expected to drop everything to comply with DTI deadlines. And this is a real concern. I can tell you personally, I dropped everything for 2 weeks preparing these submissions. I, on the back of an envelope type calculation, thought that that amounted, if somebody paid me to do that type of legal work, something in the order of R250,000 worth of time spent. And this is not only done by me, it's done by numerous other stakeholders, which results in an inordinate waste of human resources. What makes the situation so serious is that the proposed legislation is so ill-considered and ineptly drafted. And this results in the type of wasted human resources that I'm referring to. It might have been remotely palatable, some of these suggestions, if it was adequately drafted. There's ample evidence in the bill to suggest that, quite frankly, it was done by people who don't even know the basics of copyright law. There are signs that those responsible for drafting don't even know the existing legislation, and I will exhibit proof of this shortly. The legislation fails to exhibit the type of precision and clarity that we would expect and require from legislation. It just doesn't exhibit technical drafting competence and knowledge of the substantive area of law. It is shocking to think that there are individuals who are probably paid not insubstantial amounts of money that produce draft legislation of this poor quality. So, this for me is another example of service delivery failure. And in part, my presence here today is my service delivery protest. For me, legislation of this nature should be giving interested parties at least 3 months to properly consider the impacts of what's proposed. Going through this process, quite frankly, for me, merely amounts to applying a veneer of procedural formality. The truth is that the proposed legislation, certainly substantively, should never be enacted. It would amount to a dereliction of duty to pass the proposed legislation. It is of such a poor quality. Let's put it this way. This attempt will not get a pass mark if it was set as a student assignment. It makes us look like a banana republic that doesn't have the expertise in copyright law. So you probably think that my criticism is unduly harsh, but I'll amply illustrate my point. But before I do so, as the Honourable Chairperson indicated, members of Parliament are not experts in copyright law necessarily. So copyright law protects creations of the intellect. It's what people have written or drawn or produced. And there's an important reason why we protect works of this nature. They are of a peculiar, intangible nature. And it's necessary to incentivize people to create these types of work. That's why the law provides proprietary protection, its property, so that people can be incentivized to create works which benefit humanity. We are all richer for reading works of fiction, the great novels, watching movies, listening to great music. And as the chairperson says, artists and creators would like to feel that they can earn a living from providing us with these benefits. Why should we think that we are entitled to these things without payment? Why should people create these types of work out of the goodness of their hearts and not feel that they can earn a living from enriching our lives? So, copyright law provides a mechanism, like I said, it creates property rights so that people may have an incentive to create these works. But it's important to note that copyright law does not guarantee anyone a living from copyright. It merely creates the possibility for somebody to earn from what they have created. It does not, again, require anybody to monetize what they've created. So if I've written a novel, or if I've written a textbook, if I'm the copyright owner, and if I deem it appropriate, I can donate the work to the public domain. I can put it out there for free. I have that choice under copyright. Copyright enables a whole range, a spectrum of possibilities, but it is in my hands as the copyright owner to determine how I choose to exploit my work. So you can have things like the Creative Commons. If you want to donate your work to the public domain, you're entitled to do that. If you want to license your work on liberal terms, you are entitled to do that. That's what copyright property protection allows you to do. Much is sometimes made of the differences between our South African context and that which occurs elsewhere. We are told that no, maybe South Africa is different or Africa is even different. Well, I find that to be somewhat grossly overstated and, to be honest, somewhat racist. First, it assumes that Africans and South Africans are not motivated by the same incentives as their European or American or Chinese counterparts. That somehow African artists and publishers and producers of works will do so simply because they have bigger hearts and maybe sort of kinder dispositions, which is clearly a nonsense. Humans are humans, and they are motivated by certain incentives. Not entirely. I'm not saying that every work is created by a possible monetary incentive, but if we are to have these marginal works in society, that's what we should incentivize them with. And secondly, and most importantly, I think, in our context in South Africa, it seeks to absolve our government from its obligations. So we see the tenor in the copyright bill, and we'll get to it, that somehow copyright law is an impediment to education. No, it's not. We've seen government service delivery failure to provide textbooks at schools. That is not a copyright issue, I'm afraid to say. That is just government failure. It is not the question of costs. When you have irregular expenditure of over 100 billion rand, it's not a question of costs. Why are we not holding our governments to the same high standards as European governments, as American governments? Why do we want to ride roughshod over property rights to let our government off its obligations? So, let's get on to the law. The basics of copyright law are not that difficult to comprehend. It's not rocket science. As I tell my law students, you are probably studying law because you can't do science. So there are two basic concepts in copyright law. You have authorship and you have ownership. The author of the work is not necessarily the copyright owner. Right, so the default position in copyright law is that the author is the owner, but that's not necessarily the case. Copyright can pass hands, the ownership can pass hands very many times. But the author will always remain the author. Once you've created the work, you are always the author of that work. So this is an immutable situation. Once you're the author of the work, you're always the author of the work. You might have transferred ownership of the copyright, but you always remain the author. So you could expect somebody who is charged with the writing of legislation of this nature should know that basic principle of copyright. This is copyright 101. This is what I call the easy stuff. And if you see this type of failure to recognize the easy stuff, it will tell you that this legislation smells to high heaven. Concepts such as users' rights are a misnomer. We have authorship and ownership. We have specific fair dealing exceptions, and we can speak about that, but there is no single notion of users' rights. We have specific fair dealing exceptions in that. So, if the committee wants a sort of yardstick with which to measure anything that's proposed, this is, I think, your rule of thumb to use. You should ask, what impact do any of the proposals have on possible incentives for people to be authors or owners of copyright law? If there is a possible adverse effect on the incentives, we should really be looking closely at those provisions. And as you'll see, there are plenty of those. But I might be accused of being ideological, which, as far as I'm concerned, is no great slur. But I choose to deal with the matters on their merits and the weight of their arguments. And to avoid any issue, I choose the resale royalty right to illustrate some of the harsh language that I've used. Now, personally, I don't care whether we have such a right or not. So I am personally agnostic about whether we have a resale royalty right in South Africa. So I use this example to show the inept drafting of the legislation. So like I say, if you strongly believe in a right like this, the drafting is of such a poor quality that it potentially renders this type of provision ineffective and impractical. So let's look at this section. For those of you who are unfamiliar with this concept of a resale royalty right, it basically gives the author of an artistic work, you know, like a painting or a sculpture, the right to a percentage of the proceeds on any subsequent sale. So for example, you know, well-publicized cases like, oh, Picasso's works of art. So if Picasso's work of art goes for 10 million at a public auction, he, if he was still alive, or his estate, will get a portion of that sale. Like I said, I think this is a bit of sentimental nonsense, but let's assume that you want this type of provision. You know you're not off to a good start when you can't even get the title of the relevant section right. There's no resale of a royalty right. It's a resale royalty right. Secondly, the royalty right is triggered by a so-called transfer by the user. Who is the user of this work? I think I'm the artist, I've created it. Am I the user? This use of user simply exhibits the lack of understanding of what it is that the right is meant to achieve. In fact, the act is replete with phrases speaking about user, performer, owner, producer, or author. This occurs very many times in the Act. That's because the draftsperson didn't know what they were talking about. As I said, there are two key concepts, owner and author. The draftsperson...
Professor,
yeah?
I was clarifying with Mr. Hermans if he had informed people they would have 20 minutes and 20 minutes engagement.
Okay.
Were you informed?
I may have been, I think so. I'll wrap up shortly.
So, well, we prefer to engage.
Okay, sure.
So, if you would wrap up in the next 2 minutes.
Okay, sure. So, the point is, the drafting is poor. I can illustrate that going into the minutiae of this, but, you know, we know that our economy has stalled. And arguably, we should not be messing around with legislation that creates uncertainty. And this is what this type of legislation is going to do. We should be looking for every opportunity to provide incentives which can drive our economy. Our tax revenues are under pressure. Our tax revenues are not increasing at the rates at which they should. We should be looking at maximizing every potential source of growth, and that should be maximized and nurtured. And I think legislation of this nature is cavalier at best. The changes are far-reaching and potentially disastrous experiments in relation to well-established property rights. In contrast, if we look at Europe and elsewhere, while we are looking at eroding property rights, they are bolstering their legislation to provide for greater monetization of IP. So, for example, to provide IP as collateral when you're looking for financing. We are busy in the process of eroding property rights, where people don't even want to invest in a publishing business if this type of thing goes forward, certainly for things like textbooks, for educational purposes. So I can stop there, and I'm happy to elaborate further on two questions.
So I understand you need to leave due to an academic engagement. How long can you stay?
I have a lecture at 12 o'clock. So I have to drive back to Stellenbosch, unfortunately.
You need to drive back at 11.
Yes, that's right. That's
because of that, we will ask you to engage now
sure.
on your issue, but normally we wouldn't do this immediately after.
Thank you for the accommodation.
So, but unfortunately, we've only got 10 minutes. All right? So, members, we've heard the presentation. If you didn't have it before, that is regrettable. But remember, we can always come back to it. Right, let's see by show of hands. Honourable William, Honourable Mantash, Honourable Mabuyani, Honourable MacPherson, Honourable Pierce de Hazen. Shall we try 2 minutes max? Thank you. Honourable Williams.
Thank you, Chairperson. First, I just want to welcome the presentation. I just have one question. It's on your, unfortunately, your slides don't have numbers on them. It's on the one talking about Section 9B, the resale of royalty rights. And you said that it should just be resale royalty rights. I just want to know, do you have a problem with the actual, what they're saying in that, in that Section 9.B1? Or do you have the way in which they've written that section? So I'm just trying to establish because, you know, I do understand that, for instance, you can be an artist in the rural KwaZulu-Natal and have a marvelous piece of, for instance, say, beadwork that your great-grandmother left you, and then somebody arrives and they buy it for 20 rand or 200 rand or even 2,000 rand and go to Johannesburg and then sell it for 50,000 rand. And then so there's definitely a, you're being ripped off, and that's sort of trying to handle that. So I'm just trying to know whether or not you're against the concept or in which the way in which the law's been written. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable William. Honourable Mantash.
Should I cover by the question of
Tosh. The way we do things, Professor, is everyone will ask their question. You will then have the opportunity to respond. Right. Honourable Mabuyani.
Thank you very much, Chair. Mine is, I just wanted to check whether the presenter was attacking the integrity of the professionalism of the legal drafters, and that to me is very, very much unfair. The professor should have the inputs and make inputs on the bill and exactly so that we correct and see what things are happening. And I also want to engage, you say, the professor must, from now moving forward, be able to advance his facts and not come here to tell us nonsense and so forth and so forth. Those interpretatory language to us, I think it's very, very wrong. It's a parliament. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Mabuyani. Honourable McPherson.
Thanks, Professor. Thank you for the sobering presentation that you've given. Let me just say that putting draft bills is not a new phenomenon in this Parliament. It continues to happen. And I think that you would be extremely positive when you likened it to high school pupils. I think at times things like kindergarten children put some of these bills together. But that's a discussion for another time. And I think that your criticism is fair and it's important. And that's why we have public hearings, is to hear the positive and the negative. And sometimes there are things that we don't want to hear, or some people don't want to hear, but it's important that the space is open and available for you to give us your honest and frank assessment. Now, my personal view of the bill is that I think it tries to achieve too much instead of splitting things up. So when it comes to authors' works, I read an opinion piece by Katrina Vessels. I don't know if she's here or going to be presenting. And she paints a very dire picture of what is expected in the educational sort of books and literature that is written. What is your sort of end assessment of what it does to educational literature in this country? And how does that look in a year, two, sort of 5 years time? And how does that relate or impact on the educational system in this country? I'd also be interested in your views on the copyright tribunal. You didn't manage to get there in your presentation, but I've also received some concerning correspondence with the powers that are given to that tribunal. And so I'd just like you just to unpack that if possible. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable McPherson. Honourable Easterhuizen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Professor. You mentioned that author is always the author section, copyright 101. I think fair dealing is mentioned quite often. Textbooks which cannot be obtained maybe in this country can now be wholly reproduced without permission from the author. And how is fair dealing at a reasonable price? Now, where does the reasonable price? How long where is that established? There's not a reasonable price also mentioned. The Minister of Arts and Culture some time ago met with 12 other African state leaders, and they decided that they African countries then signed, or they all signed a declaration said that copyright should be balanced and fair to everyone, and access to information in libraries and all over. Also, how does this then, the copyright law, still as a section 75 bill, this still must be approved by this committee. Madam Chair, science and technology, let me say that for maybe for a later question. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Esther Hazen. There's just one thing I'd like to make, Professor, and that is you've got here a fair amount of criticism which you've motivated, but what we're also looking for in the committee is when such criticism is made, particularly of text, you know, it is very important, and we generally get this, is proposals for an alternative way of putting it across. So, for example, the criticism on poor drafting, for example. Well, draft, you know, give us how it could have been drafted had you agreed with the principle. Because doing it this way becomes a little hollow, you see, unless we can get that as well. So what you may wish to do is to send in your proposals. And of course, you're always welcome to attend again, but not necessarily to have the, you know, the 25 to 30 minutes again. So over to yourself. It is now 25 past 10. And if you can please respond in the next 5 minutes.
Ooh, 5 minutes to cover the various questions. I don't have a... I think, you know, if you want the resale royalty right, it's not a bad thing. Like I say, I'm agnostic. But the drafting is so poor that the people that it's meant to benefit might not benefit because of the poor drafting. So it speaks about the transfer of authorship. That's the copyright one that I was making. There's no transfer of authorship. It cannot be under our Copyright Act. This is an interesting one if you want to see what I mean by doesn't potentially help the persons, that grandmother who created that particular work. So the provision only applies where there has been a testamentary disposition of your copyright. Now guess what? The chances are of some indigent rural person actually having gone to see a lawyer to draw up a will is rather remote. So it doesn't speak about automatic intestate succession situations. So this probably only helps selected, probably already privileged artists. So this type of, like I say, ill-considered proposals doesn't even achieve the stated objective, if that's the case. Legal drafting, the point is we've been through this bill already in 2015. We've made, again, lengthy submissions about how it should be changed. I could help draft legislation, but not under the time frames allocated. I have a day job as well. I don't make it my single life's work to draft legislation. And besides, we shouldn't even get this type of quality as a first draft. We should get stuff that's actually technically well drafted, and then we can engage properly on the merits. The issue of publications in the education sector. Section 13B basically allows any educational institution to basically reproduce books. It doesn't take more than two neurons and a piece of string to work out that no publisher would want to go there and take the risk. What benefit is to be earned from going into that space economically? And this is the point about copyright. If government wants free textbooks, it can pay authors to write those textbooks and print it to its heart's content. Why should it ride roughshod over property rights? But, you know, just to illustrate how badly this thing is drafted, basically educational institutions, of course I'm paraphrasing, have a free hand to copy where the particular book was not priced reasonably in relation to the price normally charged in the country for a comparable work. If there is a comparable work which is reasonably priced, why do you want to ride roughshod over somebody else's copyright? Prescribe the other book that you think is comparable and reasonably priced. It's nonsense. But this is the type of proposals written in this Act. It's nonsensical. About the tribunal, you're right, it has increased powers. I'm not too fussed about that, to be honest, provided we have the core legislation and the property rights properly enshrined. The Copyright Tribunal has actually always existed. It has had very little to do. And this is the other thing about these wide exceptions provided for in the bill, to allow for translations and educational purposes. Actually, there's a very good general provision in the Act that provides for the tribunal to apply for, or you can apply to the tribunal for a compulsory license, actually more broad-ranging than any of the existing provisions. But like I say, clearly somebody hasn't read the existing Act because they're repealing that actual provision. And they are wanting to erode property rights through these other fair-dealing exceptions. About fair-dealing exceptions, the issue was raised about reproduction. Copyright law serves to incentivize the creation of works, but copyright does impose a social cost. So legislation, well-considered legislation, seeks to balance those costs. That's why I said your rule of thumb is look at the impact of that proposal on the incentivization. And you have to strike that balance. You have to ask yourself, are you really ripping the guts out of the incentives through your fair dealing exceptions or fair use? Because under the Act, it's neither fish nor fowl. We don't know if we're going with fair dealing and fair use. And if you want me to explain the difference between the two, I can do that as well. But at the moment, it's neither fish nor fowl. So we don't know where we are in that landscape, which is problematic in itself. Right? So we must be careful, and this is the thing, we say that we want to allow for education and access to education. Riding roughshod over copyright, philosophically, we are actually, in doing that, undermining the very thing we purport to want to incentivize, the creation of intellectual endeavor. What we are telling students is actually, it's not a good idea to write textbooks and works of literature and stuff like that, because you know what, if they want to use it at schools, you're not going to get paid for it, really, the way you want to be paid.
I must ask you to conclude.
I think I've answered the questions. If there isn't any one that I've answered, then I'm happy to go over that ground again.
Yes, unfortunately, the time today does not allow us to do that, but what I think will be constructive for us is what I made a proposal on to you. You've got a lot of information here. If you would, in respect of your core points made, make proposals per se, particularly in the drafting, because that is what we have found in the past extremely helpful to us. I'm also going to speak to Mr. Herman. I saw the two hands. To discuss with me before I leave today as to what we can do about certain inputs that we may need to come back to. Can we please do that? So you can see, rather than say we'll do it on this day or that day, I need to discuss it first with Mr. Herman. And that applies to yourself, Honourable Esterhazen, Honourable MacPherson. I do see where you wish to go, but I think let's get this back first from the professor and then ask Mr. Herman to factor in some time. If necessary, we'll use a Thursday night, as we've done in the past. All right. Thank you. Honourable MacPherson, I'm sorry, we couldn't make a start because there were too many late apologies and we're running half an hour late. I'm sorry. So we are moving on. Thank you very much, Professor, but I'm going to ask Mr. Herman to communicate with you this afternoon or tomorrow morning.
Like I say, I mean, I have a day job. The thing about legislation like this is it takes time. There is, as far as I'm concerned, no great hurry. We are out of date with our legislation, yes, but half-baked proposals have the risk of doing more harm than good. So let's have proper, well-considered legislation. Take time to draft things properly.
Sorry, Chairperson, what do I do with my question?
I'm going to ask you to do what we always do, which may assist the professor as well, is to put it in writing to Mr. Herman, so when he sends the email this afternoon or tomorrow morning, it's included in there. But we are trying to bring back the professor, that's what I'm saying.
Thanks.
Honourable, yes, Sir Hazen, is it a similar issue?
My question was just a follow-up on what the professor answered, actually.
Yeah, I have some follow-ups myself, but I think it's going to have to wait. We started half an hour late. Thank you. Thank you very much, Professor. If we can then go on to Dr. Spornbetter, the University of Cape Town. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, honourable members. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, colleagues. My name is Dr. Tobias Schulmesser. I'm the director of the Intellectual Property Unit, situated in the Law Faculty of the University of Cape Town. I know my presentation quite well, so I believe it's probably going to lighten the mood a little bit, because my take on all this is rather more positive than what you just heard, and that's probably what you often hear when you listen to two academics. You hear three opinions, I suppose, but it's up for you to pick. You should have, in addition to the presentation which has been put up here, you should have a more comprehensive, by the way, I sent a PowerPoint presentation, which I saw earlier. Maybe we can put this up rather than the, this is a PDF, right? So I sent two. One was for circular, which is a more comprehensive document for the members of the portfolio committee, and then I sent a PowerPoint presentation with just some pointers, which I think makes more sense to have a lot of text on the slide. I saw it in the folder earlier, so maybe we can just pull this one up instead of the one that we're seeing now. And just picking up on what we heard earlier, in addition to what you see now as a PowerPoint presentation, in my written PDF document that I circulated, I implore you to please also see my comments in the context of our written comments to the bill that we submitted at the beginning of July, because I heard the request for model language that oftentimes helps the members of the portfolio committee to tackle some of the issues that were brought up earlier, and indeed the submission that we submitted, the 30-plus page submission, it contains exactly that kind of model language that might help you in your deliberations going forward to fix some of the issues that have been addressed.
One moment, sure. Have we all got the right PowerPoint here? Understand that the PowerPoints are separate documents. All right. We all okay there? I'm looking. Honourable Esterhazen, Honourable MacPherson, is yours in the computer or laptop there? Right.
I apologize, but I thought I'd make it easy for the portfolio committee in that I actually provide more detail in another document,
right,
and then just put very few words onto the PowerPoint presentation itself. All right. So I want to start also off similar to the previous speaker by thanking both of you for the opportunity to present my views here on the copyright bill, and I want to actually congratulate you here, the DPI, and all those involved in the process of drafting the bill as it stands right now, for what I believe is a rather transparent, open, and inclusive way in which you are conducting this important law revision process. Yes, it is important, but I certainly do have the feeling that there is a sufficient level of stakeholder involvement that we have been witnessing. I've indeed followed various such processes across the world, back in my home country, Germany, for example, from colleagues in the United States. And I must say, this process here does actually stand out positively if compared to how things do work in in other countries where the time given with portfolio committees and the drafters of the bill is reasonably shorter to the time that that I think stakeholders have been given here to comment. I also, and I need to say that, and I don't mean that disrespectful, but I do actually also spend a lot of time on commenting on this, probably also 2 or 3 weeks, but I believe that as an academic at a public institution being paid from public taxpayers' money, I have already been paid for doing exactly that. So I do, in fact, consider that privilege to be involved in this process, and I'm happy to engage in the future as well. No doubt, on the 3 days that are ahead of you, today, Thursday, and Friday, I believe you will hear a lot of doom and gloom, as you have already heard, about and quite some fear-mongering, I should actually say, about the proposed revisions. But I think it's worthwhile stressing right from the outset that this law reform presents us with a great opportunity, and it's indeed urgently needed to finally update our hopelessly outdated copyright legislation. I want to remind the people in this room that our current law is from 1978. It will address some of its well-known shortcomings that have troubled us for a very long time, and this is the opportunity to fix those. It will align our laws and policies with international best practices, and it will recalibrate this better to better reflect circumstances and challenges we face, particularly in South Africa. And I do strongly believe, based on the research that we do, that circumstances in South Africa are very different to many countries around the world. It's not another Germany or England or America, not even another Kenya. It is South Africa with its own unique challenges and opportunities. And finally, law revision in the area of copyright law will also embrace digital technologies and seize opportunities for all of us that come along with what we have come to call a knowledge economy. So just from the outset, because I will struggle for time at some point, I believe, given the time constraints that we do have, not all is as bad as people make it out to be sometimes. Now, I decided to divide my time up into 20, I have 20 minutes, and I have decided to divide it up more or less into two parts. I think it is in order to start off with some general comments for context, which I hope will allow the members of the Portfolio Committee to not only listen to what I'm saying now, but also to assess and evaluate better what is being brought before you in the next 2 or 3 days. In fact, I want to highlight that on the PowerPoint version and the PDF version of my presentation, on the, I believe, on page towards the end, 20-ish, 19, now let me just double check here quickly, on 27, in fact, there is a, what I call a lawmaker checklist, which I hope will assist you in the coming days with a couple of points, fairly generally, to evaluate the kind of comments that are being made. I will not go through this list now, but it talks about issues like, is it really a copyright issue that is being brought up? Is it a result of insufficient copyright protection, or is it an enforcement issue? Is there empirical evidence to back up the claims? Is the solution in line with international instruments that we are bound by or want to be bound by? Is the solution presented modern, forward-looking, and future-proof, or is it predominantly aimed at preserving the status quo, and so forth? So I hope that these kind of bullet points at one of the last pages of my presentation will help you to put many of the comments that you will be hearing into context. And then I will, of course, be speaking about a couple of two or three specific issues. There is, of course, a lot of benefit in speaking first, but there is also the disadvantage that others can then, as I just did, respond to what you have been saying. And again, these kind of general comments together with a list at the end hopefully will enable me to carry my voice through these 3 days. So, let me start off with these general points that I promised you. And I want to stress for the members of the Portfolio Committee once again, because I did this before, that contrary and perhaps slightly different to what you heard earlier, that the overarching objective of copyright law has never been, and hopefully will never be, in my opinion, to maximize private profits. And it's certainly not an end in itself either. We don't protect copyright just for the sake of copyright protection. It is instead, what we provide is we provide for copyright protection, or if you want to actually put it slightly more negatively, which you could also do, time-limited monopolies in knowledge material and cultural goods. We seek to reward creators for their creativity and in doing so to incentivize creativity, as we just heard. But the bigger picture is missing from if you just hear that. We do that also not as an end in itself. We do this to create a maximum level for the benefit of creativity in this country for the benefit of society at large. We want people to create at maximum level so that we all benefit from that. That's the overarching objective of copyright law. And in doing so, we provide rewards and we incentivize creativity, but sometimes these kind of rewards and incentives need to be limited for the reason that I will get to later. We refer to this as a utilitarian nature of copyright protection. Now, my second general and related point to that is that both overprotection and underprotection can be equally harmful. If you protect too much, it can impede creativity, but if you protect too little, it can just as well prevent optimal levels of creativity. So what we are really after in this context is finding the right balance. I stopped because that word is so important. The right balance between protection on the one hand and access and opening of the system on the other. And especially the latter part tends to be overlooked in both international and domestic lawmaking in the past, and in many of the comments also, to be honest. And if I understand the DTI's remarks throughout the process correctly, this is about being an access and access. This is being an access-driven initiative. This bill seeks to remedy the shortcomings in the context of the past, and this is good, in my opinion. Thirdly, third general comment: context matters. We are a developing country, as I said earlier, facing very unique challenges. So what we don't need is, well, I guess a copy of copyright legislation from overseas that might, if at all, speak to kind of creativity and innovation in the sentence and so forth of this country only. We need a law that also speaks to creativity in the more rural area and for the people in these more rural areas that want to create. It needs to be just as supportive for these people as it needs to be supportive of the bigger business. So what we really do need is a tailored law that is cognizant of what is happening on the ground in this country, including and especially in areas outside of the larger cities. In other words, a copyright law that aims to address and help solve some of the very unique challenges that we as a country face, for example, in the educational sector and those faced by creators in this country. This brings me then to my fourth and penultimate general point, the plight and difficulty faced by many South African creators. This is something that comes up all the time, of course. This is a real and without a doubt an existential problem, and we must find ways of tackling it. And copyright certainly has to play a role in this. However, the vast majority of concerns expressed by real grassroots creators throughout this process, not the intermediaries, the real grassroots creators, were often actually not copyright issues. They are related to unfair competition, they are related to abuse of privacy rights, they are related to defamation issues, and most often, to be quite honest, in my impression, issues resulting from exploitative contract clauses and agreements concluded by these creators with, for example, some publishers and record labels. I would go as far as saying that since our current copyright law is already in full compliance, and our research backs that up, in full compliance with all major international copyright instruments that we are bound by, including the TRIPS Agreement, the Berne Convention, and so forth, pretty much everything that in all our views here in the room, I believe most of us at least, should be illegal, already is illegal under our law. The real problem is oftentimes related to enforcement of these rules, which is a different discussion altogether, of course. And that another problem is that arguably too many things are now illegal because of the advances of technology that weren't anticipated in the 1970s. For example, copying a legally bought CD onto an MP3 player at home. Right? To pirate. plea to the honorable members here is to be alert at all times and distinguishing the real copyright issues from the many smoke screens that have been created by the main beneficiaries of the current system. And this, in fact, is my last point generally, my last general point, really. The current copyright system seems to have disenfranchised many local creators and users alike, while it in many instances strengthened overseas rights holders and intermediaries. And my observation is that these main beneficiaries now fight the bill the hardest, and sometimes under the pretense of being a voice for South African creators, even though some of them, according to the Parliament report some years back, have in the past added to some of the grievances of creators in South Africa in the first place. I will not go into too much detail at some of the specific comments that I have, which are minor comments, really. In fact, many of the things that we heard today are really rather minor comments anyway. But if I was asked to single out a couple of issues, yes, the issue rights owner and author, there is a confusion about that. When I see that in people that draft articles or something, it's an easy, almost like kind of in Word, it's like delete and replace. Almost, this is a quick fix, I suppose, right? It's not something that that is as difficult to fix. Similar to taking the off heading. A less complex definition of person with disabilities, we suggest. I have put the model language there if you want some. State-funded IP is an issue that comes up all the time. We do, in fact, for two main reasons, think that it should be amended. We do believe that it's overreaching in assigning ownership and IP to the state for just state-funded IP. And we replace an or with an and to fix that, so it's pretty easy. And the second part is that we do have some fear that the current provision, Section 5, that is of the Act, is perhaps not sufficiently aligned with another piece of intellectual property legislation called the Intellectual Property Act from Publicly Financed Research and Development Act, that I should say. Quotation rights, the comma seems to have been added. That makes a huge difference in that it narrows down the current language quite a bit. I have taken the liberty in this to take the comma off. And you can just compare the current version of 12A and what you see there, and you will see how we fix that. The issues of open licenses, parallel importation, and freedom of panorama, I will not deal with in a great amount of detail with, because I know that other speakers will be addressing some of these issues, especially freedom of panorama, later on this week. Parallel importation, just to give you a little bit of an idea what that is, in my opinion, there should really nothing preventing us from purchasing legally produced books from, say, India or China, if they are cheaper, and import them then into South Africa and practice. However, our current copyright law does exactly do that, at least in the way that it's being interpreted. So we do welcome the fact that this is being tackled and is now it is not possible under the new under the bill. Let me talk for, if I do have 5 minutes, on fair use. This is the issue that came up most often in the discussions in the comments that I have seen so far. So just to remind everybody of the concept and the mechanism and the working of copyright law, it is to reward creators and incentivize and maximize creativity and to strike a fair balance between the interests of rights holders on the one side and users and the public interest on the other side. So to get the balance right, we first and foremost have numerous rights in the Act, which are untouched by the bill, and in fact increased. We have numerous provisions in the law that do provide protection for rights holders. And then we have on the other side so-called copyright exceptions and limitations. Some use the word user rights to put people on the same level, but let's call it exceptions and limitations to achieve exactly that balance. And if you just look globally, in my opinion, you can divide the approaches that countries across the world have taken in relation to fair use into three kind of different approaches, three columns. You have the EU, European Unionist approach, where they try to legislate up from each and every instance of permissible uses. This, in my opinion, is quite a task and probably something that is in times of rapid technological change a difficult one. It will at least require constant updating of these lists to make them to keep them relevant. Then we have fair use on the other side, something that we seem to be working towards now with the bill. But I tell you why we are not really doing this, coming back to some of the comments that you heard earlier, which is essentially that there is one broad, open-ended exceptions and limitation that says you can use it as long as fair, subject to certain criteria, which I will show you in a second. And this is only then accompanied by a few more specific exceptions and limitations. This is what I favor, for what it's worth. And then the one in the middle is the fair dealing one that we have at the moment, which is also one open-ish clause, but only for a narrow and rather limited list of purposes, which makes it rather less useful. Now, just quickly through the next two slides. This is actually, it's always good to look at the law when you start to actually discuss the law, so I just thought I, and address the law also in comments. This is section 12 as proposed in the bill. This is the, they call it fair use, but the one problem is it calls it fair use, but then if you press the next button, it is actually not a real fair use provision because the words such as have miraculously disappeared, and we really do hope that in the coming week they are being reintroduced to open up the list that follows that otherwise will not go far enough. So if the decision is made to go for fair use, which I suggest, then these two important words such as need to be added to that. But now the second one, the second part of 12 on the next slide, is actually more important. You cannot just copy everything and whole works all the time to buy one book and then make 2,000 copies for the library or something, as we have heard so often on radio, in the newspapers and so forth. Everybody who makes that statement has not seen these factors, I believe, that accompany fair use. There is four factors that need to be considered when you make the call as to whether a use in question is fair or not. The nature of the work in question, the amount, the purpose of the use, and then most importantly, the last factor, the substitution effect of the act upon the potential market for the work in question. Now, obviously, there is that market effect if you make these 2,000 full copies of one work, and so it will not qualify as fair use. Key advantages of fair use, you see that here, it's flexible, it allows equitable case-by-case decisions, it makes it future-proof and therefore avoids regular revisions of the law, which I think we really all don't want here to having to go through this process of law revision like every 2 years or so again, especially in light of new technologies. It facilitates, based on the research that we have been doing on that innovation, it supports innovative, not necessarily so much existing business models. Two or three points I want to take out in terms of criticisms raised so far against fair use. You see them here, relies too heavily on litigation, which is problematic because it's expensive and cumbersome in South Africa in particular. It will, it will destroy the licensing revenues for copyrighted work. It promotes piracy. It will destroy the publishing industry. So let's deal with them one by one. If you click once, you see the first one, too much reliance on litigation, well, and litigation is expensive and not accessible to many. Well, this is not a problem that copyright only has. It's a problem in South Africa generally. It's a litigation problem and not so much a problem of copyright. It's not just fair use. And then with caution, at first at least, guidance can be used from overseas. I'm very much in favor of not relying too heavily on case law from overseas because, as I say so often, circumstances are so different. But for that time between now and until such time where we have our own case law, then eventually we can rely on quite a rich body of case law from overseas. You see the other points that are on there. It is probably more a problem for users than for creators because they are the ones who would have to rely on this clause. Creators even now have to go to the courts if they have to have the feeling that their rights are being infringed. So I don't really see that point. And then, most importantly, based on experiences in countries that have fair use, it doesn't seem to be a real-world problem, really, because abuse of fair use doesn't seem to happen in these countries. So why would it happen in South Africa?
Just go on a minute.
Yeah?
Just a minute. Members, you will be getting the digital, you know, emails. I'm sure you can see your overprint and you're looking on the overhead. The other point is that you need
time
to wrap up in a minute.
Yes, okay. So I leave you, let me see what other one I want to debunk here. Destroy licensing revenues. Again, this comes back to the four factors. People have not understand the use if they make that claim, because obviously there is that that fairness test that includes substitution and deals with that. Destroys the publishing industry and has done so in Canada. That amused me a little bit, because Canada actually has fair dealing and not fair use, so that's something to first consider. That's what we have at the moment. But certainly also we have actually spoken to some academics since we heard that in Canada that deal with that, and they said, well, you know what, there's many other reasons for the publishing sector in Canada struggling at the moment, and including reduced government spending, non-adaptation to new business model, and so forth. Fair use promotes piracy. The last one, I don't get it. It's the opposite. Fair use makes certain uses legal and is therefore unrelated to piracy. Uncertainty, well, it creates some uncertainty, but what we are really trying to promote is flexibility, and that flexibility comes with that uncertainty, I suppose. And then lastly, and thanks again for giving me the time here, fair use violates the right of property. We've heard that many times. There is a whole, like, body of, like, PhD thesis as to whether intellectual property should actually qualify as property in the first place, but let's assume for the sake of argument that it is. I cannot see what the problem here is, because if you look at Section 20, 25 of our legislation, it is pretty clear that while you cannot expropriate, or only under very limited circumstances, you may certainly deprive the right of property when you balance that right of property with other important constitutional rights, which I think is exactly happening here. Finishing up with this, I really do believe that there's a lot of things just said, he said, she said. I really do believe that many things that we do say are backed up by evidence. I just put some up here of publications that we recently published, one here specifically with copyright and so forth. Some of you have seen this book, but just because it came out last week, I want to alert you to this, if you click this one. Just last week, Joseph Stiglitz, former chief economist of the World Bank and Nobel Prize winner in economics, published a paper with us, 90 pages long, on intellectual property, and I didn't want to circulate it before. I didn't expect you to read those 90 pages. But certainly have a look at this. He speaks about copyright. He and his co-authors speak about copyright very much in the same kind of way as I just have done. One quote, there's many that I put onto the slides, but the last one perhaps is the most important one. Copyright must be calibrated so as to remove unjust barriers to access and to ensure that the most vulnerable among us can access the vast opportunities that a high-quality education provides. So if he says it, I guess it must be right. Thank you very much for your time.
Well, not necessarily, but let's leave that one. Thank you very much then, Dr. Scornbetter. Members, you have 2 minutes each as last time on Norman Stolfe. Got it right this time, so I guess I'm starting off on the right foot. Honourable Williams, Honourable McPherson, Honourable Mantash, Honourable Esterhazen. In that order, please.
Thank you, Chairperson. I also would like to thank the Dr. Scholzeter for the presentation. Indeed, it's a different perspective, and it's really helping towards boosting our morale as we are starting this public hearing. I think, Chairperson, when Dr. Schoenwetter started, he mentioned that there is a desperate need for the amendment. And he pointed out what we would like to propose instead of what is currently there. And I think we really need to acknowledge that and thank him for that. But also he mentioned about the real problem that is actually enforcement. But I didn't see any proposals that he made towards remedying that situation. So if you can just give us some kind of direction on what he proposes in terms of enforcement, and also maybe make proposals in terms of what needs to be done in cases of non-enforcement.
Thank you, Honourable Munsch-Goldberg. Honourable Williams.
Thank you, Chair. I also would like to welcome the input. I just have some questions around Section 10. It it seems section 10 or section 12, about the fair use. Now, there's many things, subsections under that part in the actual proposed legislation. And if you could tell us, you understand, and I think everybody understands why we want to put in this fair use so that we can, you know, more easily access information for our, you know, for education purposes. Which points do you think should be removed, and which points do you think should be put in to this section on fair use? Because the intent is there for the betterment of society, let's say, through education, but how can we do it to balance that between, you know, the financial reward that authors want to obviously get? Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Williams. Honourable MacPherson.
Thanks, Chairperson. I think you're right when you say that context matters, although I'm concerned that your context may be misplaced, because I think in the context of a country where particularly creative people and you know, people of a rural nature have not had the ability to benefit off of their works or their manuscripts or whatever they've created, that we should be looking to incentivize them and to protect those rights, and not sort of this view of, well, you know, how do we just open up more without having some form of incentivization or protection for them. And one of the big concerns that I see within the bill is it was very ambiguous on how property rights, specifically Section 25 of the Constitution, intersect with this bill, and how those property rights of authors, of creators, are protected. Because if we view them as property rights, then they must be protected, they must be rewarded. And so I'd like to understand what your view is on how Section 25 should intersect with this bill, why it is not explicitly speaking to Section 25 in the bill, and what happens to the assignment of a copyright after 25 years. It's unclear what would happen to that right in the bill, and what your personal view is on that. Do they have to reclaim it? Does it fall to the state? Is it up for sale? I'm not 100% sure. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable MacPherson. Honourable Montash.
Thank you, Chief. But I also want to appreciate the presentation. I just want Professor to clarify the first presenter said there was a difference between the author and the owner. Whether the professor agrees to that notion. And on in your presentation you said there was something missing in section 12 where there's a list of purposes. I thought you said there was something missing. I didn't hear it clearly. And in the page before the three approaches, you said you preferred reading. And what is it that you said is of vital importance to us as South Africans? Because I may be expected to raise that. A one-size-fits-all approach is not as conducive for South Africans, looking at their background. And I also agree with your assertion that a drafting of these presentations and assisting government or us as lawmakers to go to the correct direction must not be financialized.
Thank you, Honourable Montash. Honourable Easterhazen.
Thank you, Chair. comment. You are the director of UCP IP. How would you, intellectual property law in South Africa, or does Bill, let me honestly say, does Bill fail to accord with the South African IP law understanding of author and owner? For example, a university can be the owner, an academic like yourself can be the author. I suppose on that. In your paper, several provisions the term right ownership used in the sense of author. But also, this bill refers throughout this bill to users. This creates a perception that that users are the right holders or the holders to the right themselves. And the term is also used interchangeably with other terms such as author, right holders, that give that impression, and that users can now claim royalty despite the assignment of the copyright. I also agree with much of what you said on a copyright is really illegal. The real problem is enforcing that, and I 100% agree with that. The real problem that we have in a lot of things in this country.
Thank you,
Honourable
McPherson. Yes,
Honourable
McPherson,
Dr.
Sobering, would you like to comment? In your own summarized point, you note, you know, with respect to the advantage of fair use is its flexibility, but as you point out yourself at some point, that this itself can be a disadvantage. There's both an advantage and a disadvantage. And, you know, when it comes to enforcement, if currently we're having challenges, would this not increase the challenges we have? Because you would have to build up, you know, a real box of case-by-case precedent. And then, of course, the context could even be different. So if enforcement is currently a challenge, I'm just wondering, while recognizing the value of flexibility, you know, how would it affect other issues? So if you could just give us a comment in that direction, but noting that the committee itself took less than 10 minutes, would you please take 6 minutes, because I'll give you an extra minute or so, but please try to respond accordingly.
Right. Thank you very much for these questions, which are all helpful. I want to reiterate that many of the things where more clarity or more detail was required from our side, this level of detail is indeed contained in our submission to the bill. It is really a result of being given 20 minutes that I can have to brush over some of these issues. So please do also take this sort of lengthy document into account. I want to underscore what was said first. Yes, it is actually urgent. I do believe it is urgent that we get to that, because our law is hopelessly outdated, and so we should attend to that with a feel of urgency. Enforcement. I stick to this point. I am not sure whether I am the best person to give in-depth advice of how enforcement can be improved, because it is almost outside the copyright system. Certainly, the obvious things that come to mind is to make the court systems more accessible. Whether this is an issue of building more physical places, of making fees lower. This is all enforcement-related issues that are not so much a problem of copyright or this particular piece of legislation, but any other legislation as well. I believe that I understand that the idea of having copyright tribunal is an attempt to make the threshold lower for access to some form of court, so to speak. I think it should also be seen in that context. The whole issue, just for the record, I am in favor of fair use, not fair dealing. The arguments pro and con are again in the submission. It is in the end none of the solutions, whatever you hear, none of the solutions is perfect. And it is, in the end, a cost-benefit kind of analysis that has to be made. And after many years of looking at this, we have come to the conclusion that the cost-benefit analysis is in favor of the use vis-a-vis all the other ones. Let me see what else was mentioned here. Context matters. I want to just, it's a general comment to at least two or three of the questions that came out. There is this dichotomy that kind of underlies those discussions oftentimes between users and creators. And I think that's the wrong dichotomy to start off with, because if you look how, that might have been right when the current Copyright Act was drafted, that you have the creators on the one side and that you have the users on the other side. But in terms of how creativity and innovation has evolved through availability of technological new technology, such as YouTube, for example, just to start with, if you see the amount of creativity happening, amateurish, non-professional creativity, that shows you that oftentimes, more often than not these days, by far in fact, every creator is also at some point of the creational process a user of someone else's material. It's hardly ever the case that we create something from scratch. We build on what others call standing on the shoulder of giants and build forward, and you create barriers for those creators if you make it difficult to enter the market by just having to clear more rights than you should in plain speaks or speak. So you need to make this system open enough for those new creators at the beginning of the creation process so that they can become these kind of end creators. So you need to look at the issue of being creators and users a little bit more holistically rather than just saying we have the creators and the users. It is merging. It is a merging concept rather than anything else. And then the issue of, and I'm happy to take that conversation forward also afterwards. Please do forward a question and then we can actually respond to that. In the detail that is required. A question of the chair, essentially, the enforcement risk does play a role in that chair has disappeared, but there is the risk that was outlined by the chair indeed of that on the face of it deepening some of the problems that we are facing at the moment. But what we see from other countries with fair use type legislation is that they have actually reverted and found a lot of out-of-court solutions to perhaps what could be considered a vagueness in the system by drafting guidelines among stakeholders that then later the courts have actually used to decide the cases. So they have used the stakeholder guidelines to inform the cases later that came to the courts rather than the other way around. So I think there is a lot of opportunity to also there is some level of certainty that that a lot of discussions around fair use will actually happen out of court rather than in court, which if it was the case then indeed would make some of the problems more difficult. That's all I have time for, I'm afraid.
Again, the same point applies to members as well as yourself. You did give us certain proposals, but I'm sure arising out of some of the questions you may wish to add to that. And members, you may wish to add certain questions to this issue. I think what we should recognize, all of us, this is the first bite. And in many ways, we're testing the waters. We hear a few more people who have different other points of view. And we may decide that, look, let's have X and Y back. All right, whoever they are. Honorable Max Wilson.
Thanks, Chair. I'd just like that answer on section 25 in writing, please. Be helpful. Thanks.
Now, I also asked for my constitution to be brought to me with all the references made, etc. I must say you have an advantage over me, Honourable Macpherson, and knowing all these sections, you know, as it were. And I have yet to sort of do that. Right. All right. No, but thank you very much. I'm glad we've all sort of managed to get onto some sort of level footing here. I'd like to also point out that we did have the questions immediately after the first presenter because of his challenges that he had. That is not my intention. My intention is to try and group some of these presentations so that we do save time. And also, as I've just said, we may wish to add on an extra opportunity once we've got the flavour of the different points of view and bring you all back again, okay? Perhaps not everyone, but many of you. But thank you very much, Dr. Skarnvetter, and we appreciate that. Members, we're going to have a running tea break, and then what we're going to do is to have a musical. I'm not suggesting you weren't artistic, Dr. Skarnvetter, but you know, having sort of musical people together. I think Delro, is that right? The Music Rights Association, Sumro, and then Professor Flynn, who's on EARN, yes, EARN, Global Network of Copyright Users Act. If one thinks of all the streaming that's going on, my immediate reaction was, is the streaming or broader than that? And I'm sure you'll let us know, Professor Flynn. So can we do it that way then, with Delro coming up next? You'll do your presentation, and then followed by Sumro, and then we'll ask the questions after the third. Is that in order? I'm looking at you, all of you, Delro and the rest. Thank you. Do come in here. Thanks, Dr. Skarnvetter. The tea will be outside in about 10 minutes or so, and then you just don't help yourself with comeback. Is that okay? Thank you.
Yeah, I understand. Also, do you not do things?